There are so many ways that we can lose ourselves. I want you to think of a time that you've lost yourself in an experience. Maybe in the intricate world of a novel, or making music, or listening to music. I have so many memories of losing myself deep in conversation with a loved one, when I'm walking in the woods, swimming in the ocean, or when I'm dancing. In each of these states, like salt dissolved in water, I dissolve into union with wonder, with God. But these are all the easy kinds of losing oneself. There are plenty of ways to lose oneself too that we don't see in such a romantic light, that carry a lot more complexity and stigma. I'm thinking of the people I have loved who live with complex mental illnesses, with dementia. I'm thinking about my dad, whose ways I've known so well keep changing since his stroke 2 years ago. I'm thinking about anyone whose mind is not in sync with the rhythm of the world as it is expected of them. We don't know if we will lose a part of ourselves, and many of us already have, whether welcomed intentionally or springing up unintentionally and unexpectedly, upending everything we know. And all of these experiences, those we romanticize and the ones we stigmatize, trouble the notion of a contained, narrativized self. In a society where personhood is defined by a controllable mind and a controllable self, we're trained to fear disorientation, to fight against what scatters a sense of who we know ourselves to be. Losing one's mind, which is already an ableist conception, or losing oneself altogether renders someone disposable. But maybe there's something sacred in that scattering. Maybe disorientation is not always just a breaking, but a kind of blessed opening. The Beatitudes offer us something to think about in terms of the self and in terms of personhood, what defines it, how we value it. Jesus proclaims up there on the mount to the people of Israel, who is blessed, not just to offer comfort, and that's part of it, but to redefine who counts as worthy in the kingdom of God. And I'll speak more about that in a moment, but we should take seriously that what immediately follows the Beatitudes and what's often separated out under a different heading in some translations of the Bible is this image of salt and light, which seems to trouble what the essence of a person is. You are the salt of the earth, Jesus says, but if it loses its taste, how can its saltiness be restored? It's no longer good for anything. Commentaries are all over the place on what the historical meaning of the salt metaphor is, but it's often interpreted or used in contemporary contexts as a gentle and loving warning. Because you're essentially and valuably you, stay consistent, stay useful, stay unchanged, stay who you are. But what I hear in this question, what happens if it loses its taste, is something else. I hear the possibility that Jesus is actually naming how the world treats those who change, those who dissolve, those who lose the flavor that made them legible or useful to others. Indeed, we pathologize, we medicalize, and we marginalize. If people lose their flavor, we treat them as if they're no good for anything. Without its taste, salt is thrown out, trampled underfoot. Is a person still a person if their sense of their own personness has dissolved like salt into water? How do our ideas about what counts as valuable forms of reality or imagination inform how we decide who deserves agency, refuge, community, and care? Johanna Hedva is a modern contemplative who writes from a body and a mind shaped by chronic illness and mental health experiences. They write about their experience, particularly with depersonalization, what the DSM classifies as a disorder, as a place of fear, yes, but also of mystical insight. When they were diagnosed with depersonalization disorder, they recalled being terrified that they could be labeled as a D-person at all, but also that this label wasn't limited to a DSM diagnosis. They ask, how many people, as I write this, have been declared politically, legally, medically, culturally, economically, racially, socially, and gender binarily to be D-persons? Hedva describes their experience of depersonalization as one where the I dissolves, where all the boundaries around everything that have contained it are drained of their solidity. This experience, Hedva realized from their own experience, was not so far from that of the mystics that they were reading. Because mysticism, too, is loosening. a kind of unraveling, a falling away of the boundaries between the self and God, the world, nothingness, a non-dual union of grace and love. Meister Eckhart has said about mysticism, the eye with which I see God is the same eye with which God sees me. And Cynthia Bourgeau refers to mysticism as actually losing one's life because the ego can no longer hold one together and we're cast into the mercy of being itself. So very similar to Hedva's experience of what we label depersonalization, where the eye dissolves and all the boundaries between things have fallen away. In another culture, in another time, they perhaps would have just been called a mystic. And it makes me wonder again, when we talk about someone losing their essence, if a self can dissolve, is that really loss in the way that we stigmatize, or an undoing into something more expansive that we have devalued? What would happen if we revalued experiences out of sync with dominant expectations of reality? If we recognize that anyone deemed depersons for losing part of themselves as being in touch with something sacred that many of us deny, Hedva calls us to revalue that sacredness through what they call a mystical anarchism. It's about claiming, embodying, revaluing that depersonness. Revaluing as sacred the de-governable, de-masterable, de-possessed, de-owned, de-owning, de-private, de-privileged, de-individual. And that's kind of what Jesus does in the first verses of Matthew 5. He doesn't bless the self-contained, the competent. He blesses those who have been undone. Blessed are the poor in spirit, he says, those whose spirits are emptied out. Blessed are those who mourn, those who've lost something so deeply that grief shapes their being. Blessed are the meek, those who have been humbled by life, not because they're less than, but because they no longer fight for dominance in a world obsessed with selfhood. He blesses those who have disrupted the rhythm of an atomizing world with their suffering, with their liberatory dreaming, and their political disruption. This recognition is not a dismissal of the real and urgent care, the material care that people need, or the complexity or suffering that comes with any of these experiences. But alongside that care, we can honor and listen to those experiences. We might then recognize that our own moments of rupture, disorientation, our own moments of losing ourselves, whether beautiful or terrifying or both, may not be so far from the mystical. These days, as the gap between the world we need and the world that is grows wider every day, I witness myself doubting my visions for a new world. I admit that I wonder sometimes if I'm delusional to believe in, not to mention think I could contribute towards reversing the course of things as they are. But if I let myself deny those visions, I deny all other sorts of visions. I deny the blessedness of those of us who see worlds most can't see, in whatever way that means or looks. I deny the blessedness of those who inhabit non-hegemonic ways of being. I deny the blessedness of those among us whose worlds would be most radically changed, who might find freedom and relief if we kept going, if we kept envisioning. So this mystical anarchism that Hedva talks about is also solidarity with those pushed aside for seeing differently, for seeing as mystics, for dissolving like salt. And Hedva is not a traditional contemplative or mystic. They're not the Julian of Norwich or the Thomas Merton, but I chose to bring them in during this Lydian Lent season when we've paired contemplative thinkers with the gospel reading because they make a radical proposal that contemplation or mysticism is not about sacrificing some way of being, but about seeing what already is differently. Our thinkers in this world who already see differently, who already live and imagine reality from places of openness, from a bit of freedom from contained selfhood, are our mystics. Those are our blessed, and Jesus tells us so. I could end this sermon by saying that if anyone, as salt of the earth, loses their saltiness, we must vow to protect them from being trampled underfoot. And that is surely a vow we should and can take together. But it's worth noting that salt is a stable compound. It changes properties, but it actually can't lose its taste. It just changes form. So I want to ask you, how do you want to be recognized or cared for if, when, a part of you changes form? We don't know whether or when we will lose our bodies or our minds, or when parts of us that we cherish and others cherish in us will slip away. But if we do, when we do, we can absolutely know that we are already blessed.